Hi, I'm Terry Meekin, and this is Swindon 105.5.
Welcome to Roving Report.
The sun above us is so hot, and the gravity of the universe so great, that hydrogen atoms that normally wouldn't go anywhere near each other actually fuse together. And during this atomic fusion, neutrons are spewn out at such speed and with such energy that it keeps our sun star alive. Now, we can't run an extension lead up to the sun, but if we could recreate these conditions on Earth, mankind would have an unlimited source of energy. And that's what the United Kingdom Atomic Energy Authority and other scientists from around the world have been trying to achieve ever since 1978. So I went off to Cullen Research Centre, where, in two enormous buildings, all the UK's experiments into atomic fusion have been taking place. And I asked Nick Holloway why it was taking so long to put theory into practice.
We're actually building stars on Earth. We're building smaller versions of the sun, because what happens in the sun is nuclear fusion takes place and produces a lot of energy, which keeps the sun and all the stars burning up there in space. We try to do the same here on Earth, on a much smaller scale, obviously. JET is the next big international machine which is being built in the south of France, called ITER. A lot of the fusion researchers around the world are taking part and preparing for that next big project, which we think will be the stepping stone to a commercial fusion power plant.
And how many people working on the site here?
On fusion itself, we've got about 500 people working on both the JET experiment and the MAST experiment, which is the UK's own fusion device.
After that brief introduction from Nick Holloway, I asked Dawati Borba to sit down at the table and tell us how nuclear fusion works in practice and how it's expected to run power stations in the future.
What we're trying to do here is to replicate the process that occurs in the center of the sun. And the center of the sun is extremely hot, and the temperatures are high enough that hydrogen starts fusing and producing a huge amount of energy. We do this by overcoming the repulsive forces of the atom nuclei by heating to a very large temperature.
So effectively what you've got as a source material is the fusion of a couple of atoms that wouldn't normally fuse unless you actually put them into extreme conditions, is that correct?
Exactly. The extreme conditions that occur at the center of the sun, we replicate in terms of extremely high temperatures. And this will overcome the natural tendency of the nuclei of the different atoms to repel and get close enough together so the nuclear forces take over and they start fusing in what we call nuclear fusion. We can recreate temperatures of the order 10 times hotter than the center of the sun. Right. And these are the conditions that are required for fusion reactions to occur.
How are you actually getting from you creating atoms colliding and fusing together to running a power station?
By fusing atoms like the isotopes of hydrogen, this process releases a huge amount of energy, much more energy than the conventional chemical reactions that power conventional power plants. And this process generates heat.
Just holding you there, by achieving this fusion process at this very high temperature, you fire off a neutron. And that neutron then goes somewhere and starts the process of heating up something else. What are we captured in eventually?
A fusion reactor will have a very important component, which is basically a blanket around the machine that will take this heat. And this heat will then be converted using a steam turbine or a conventional steam system to produce electricity.
So at the top level, we create a fusion of two atoms that would not normally get together because we've got to create the conditions for it to happen. It kicks off a football in the form of a neutron into a blanket. It hits it so hard and with such energy that it converts into heat, and then the heat is taken away in the form of a normal coolant system to drive a steam-driven power plant.
Precisely.
What's the benefits of fusion to mankind as opposed to the existing way of doing things?
The fuel itself and the byproducts of this reaction are very harmless from the environmental point of view.
And so, are they readily available?
Yes. The most efficient source of to produce energy from fusion is to react directly the heavy isotopes of hydrogen. Deuterium, which is one of these isotopes, is readily available in the water of the oceans. The other element that we need, we will be producing it inside our reactor.
What's the other element called?
It's tritium.
Let's just take us through the process of what's had to be built in order for you to create the sun on Earth to do these experiments.
Basically a vacuum chamber.
How big a chamber are we talking about here?
A large building, 10 meters or 30 feet tall, where we inject the fusion fuel and we heat it to extremely large temperatures. And one of the challenges is to keep this superheated gas that is then becomes fully ionized from touching the wall of the chamber.
We come in the morning, switch the lights on, we have a cup of tea, and we're going to start to generate some electricity. So the next thing we do is we inject some gas. How much gas and what sort of gas do we inject into the chamber?
So it's mostly hydrogen and heavy cousins of hydrogen, which one of them we use very regularly is deuterium. We only inject a very small amount of gas.
All right. So we've got a vacuum at a very low level in a chamber. We've got a small amount of gas in there now. What happens next?
Next, we have to superheat this gas to a very high temperature.
Why do we have to do that?
This is the only way these fusion reactions will occur. We need to get the nuclei of hydrogen to be at such a high velocity when they get close to each other, they have enough velocity to overcome the natural repulsion of the electric charge of this that this nuclei possess. The nuclear forces are very powerful, but they only act at very small distances. Talking about distances that are much smaller than the size of the normal molecules on the normal atom. You have to bring the nuclei to distances that are comparable to the size of this nuclei. Right.
And unless we do that, and unless we fuse it at that level, we won't get the neutron flying off to start the steam generators eventually through the blanket. So we put the gas in. How are we going to raise it from room temperature, should we say, to what sort of temperatures are we talking about?
We're talking about temperatures of the order of 10 times hotter than the center of the sun. And these are extremely high temperatures of the order of tens, also hundreds of millions of degrees centigrade.
Right, so we got this gas in the chamber, which is inert at the moment. We now got to heat it up. Heat it up so much so that it actually turns into a plasma. How do we get it from room temperature up to those temperatures that you've just described?
The first method that it's used is to pass a very strong current through the plasma. This will raise the temperature around 10, 20 million degrees centigrade in the case of jet. But this temperature still not enough to generate a sufficient amount of fusion. The important role played by the magnets is that as you get such a high temperatures, you have to prevent that this superheated gas gets in contact with the surrounding surface.
So the magnet's not part of the heating process?
The magnets are only part of the heating process in the sense that you can produce this very large current. The other very important role of the magnets is that they prevent through this very strong magnetic field that this very strongly superheated ionized gas gets in contact with the wall.
Okay, well, we'll come on to that in a moment. We're still lighting the fire. Yeah. We've got the plasma at a certain degree, 20,000 degrees centigrade. We've now got to rise it up towards some temperature. What other devices do we use to turn that gas into such phenomenally high temperatures? What do we do next?
For that, we use two different methods. The first one is to accelerate particles in a conventional accelerator. And these particles are ionized, they're accelerated, and then they are neutralized.
Can we just slow that down a bit? So we've got a device which goes through the plasma, which is called a nuclear accelerator.
A particle accelerator, yes.
So it fires particles into the gas at extremely fast speeds.
Yes.
And the transition time through the gas is so fast that it heats the gas up even higher than you're talking about.
Exactly.
So we raise it from what temperature to what temperature using that?
This raises the temperature from the tens of millions of degrees centigrade, which is already very hot, to the required temperatures to get fusion reactions in a sufficiently efficient manner, which between 100 and 200 million degrees centigrade.
Didn't you also say during the course of our preliminary discussions that there is a microwave element as well to agitate the gas to a higher temperature?
So that's the second method that we use, which is equally efficient in raising the temperature to the required temperatures. And this is basically by injecting waves. waves carry energy.
Like a microwave.
Like a microwave. We actually have a system which operates at the very similar frequencies as the microwaves that people use at home, but of course, 1,000 times more powerful than the conventional microwave system. We also have systems that operate with radio frequency waves.
So we've got three means of heating the gas up from room temperature up to the temperature of the sun where fusion will take place under those conditions. And at that stage, we've turned the gas into plasma, is that correct?
Yes, so we turn this gas into a superheated plasma. If the temperature is sufficiently high, and if the amount of hydrogen in the chamber is sufficiently high, you start get fission reactions.
Just automatically, without doing anything else, just the stuff that you put in originally will start to react with each other.
It's just a matter of temperature and density, and we get automatically these very powerful fission reactions occurring and releasing a huge amount of energy. The plasma is very hot. You need to keep this plasma at a very high temperature to keep fission going. If the plasma, for any eventuality, touches the wall, it will cool down. And this cooling down will immediately stop any fission reactions. It will destroy the properties that the plasma requires to produce
make the fusion. We've got magnets going round horizontally, a magnet going round vertically. We keep this demon in this inner space just by itself without touching the walls.
There's a lot of science, a lot of engineering going to making a configuration where all works together. We have this very peculiar shaped chamber, which is a very large donut. And this is part of the science and the engineering of making everything fit together in a way that all this superheated gas stays away from contacting directly the walls of the chamber.
So how long have you been able to keep plasma going for in creating fusion product?
We need to keep this process going for a long period of time.
What's a long period of time?
So a jet... We've been able to sustain this process for a few seconds, which is clearly not sufficient if you want to turn this technology.
What's the limiting factor on jet which stops it from going any further than a few seconds?
The limiting factor of jet, one of the main and the most important limiting factors is the magnets. They are conventional copper magnets, and they heat up if they are operated for a long period of time. And in the case of jet, this is limited up to a few seconds, maybe in some conditions up to a minute.
So if you had superconducting magnets and everything else was in place, how long could you keep the pulse going for?
If you replace your copper magnets with superconducting magnets that do not heat up in a similar way and do not require so much power to keep the magnetic field in place, allow you to run the plasma for much longer periods of time.
How long is this piece of string?
In case we're talking about hours instead of minutes.
So if you had superconducting magnets on your jet machine, you could actually run the process for hours, you think?
The old jet machine has been designed to run only for a few seconds. So yes, you'll need to change the superconducting magnets, but also the power supplies on jets have been designed to run only for a few seconds.
Right.
So the jet machine itself will need to be, let's say, re-engineered, redesigned to run for a longer period of time.
You've proved the concept working. Now, have you done that by measuring the neutrons, the ones that eventually will drive the power station, as they get emitted from the fusion?
Once we get this very relevant conditions for fusion reaction to occur, we need to demonstrate that we actually get fusion out of it.
And you've been able to do that?
And we have been able to do this. One obvious way is to measure the heat that comes out of these reactions, but this is not the best way or not the most efficient way. The most efficient way that we use is to measure these neutrons that are byproducts of these.
The ones that are going to drive the heating of the power plant. I'll keep coming back to that because that is the key to generate electricity in the real world eventually.
Yeah, so the merit and the performance comes by generating this large amount of neutrons.
And how do you measure how much is coming out and how much you're getting?
Basically, we count the number of neutrons.
What happens to the neutrons after they hit the blanket and they've generated energy and the energy then does its work? What happens to the neutrons then?
The neutrons themselves bounce around. They collide with the different nuclei. They can react to the different nuclei. In the case they react with the lithium.
Which is in the blanket.
Which is in the blanket. They will, some of them produce tritium, which is the other important element to keep fission reaction going, that I need to be fed into the machine. A large majority of neutrons would just bounce around, slow down, and eventually decay through the natural decay process. It's so difficult. It requires so much effort to keep the conditions for fission to occur. We need so much power, so much energy, that if anything is switched off, it will just die away naturally and it cool down.
Do you know the actual running course of generating electricity to produce a fusion pulse for 1 second? How much is it costing?
The cost of fusion in terms of producing electricity is not so much in terms of the running costs.
No, but I was just thinking of trying to get an answer to how much is it costing in electricity to get that 1 second of neutron?
Yeah, the most important aspect towards the cost of producing electricity through fusion is the capital investment on the machine itself.
I'm still not answering the question.
Yes, I know, but to create these fusion conditions, you need these superconducting magnets.
Yes.
And you need a very large infrastructure with a large vessel. You need the blanket. So the...
But at the moment, I'm just talking about your own experiment.
Yes.
Without it being connected, interconnected things which aren't yet built, I'm just talking about what the running costs are.
So in terms of what we do now, I was talking about the future, but in terms of what we do now, in terms of running our experiments, which cannot be directly translated into the future cost of electricity produced by fusion, because we have the, as I said, the copper magnet. Each run of the experiment costs on average, £20,000.
Okay, that's fine. That's a good answer. Yeah. That gives us an indication. So we've got £20,000 spent to get some neutrons coming out, of which we measure, which at this scale, if it went into a blanket which would never existed, has got to generate at least £21 worth of electricity in order for it to be economically viable. And you're suggesting that as the technology develops and as it becomes more self-sufficient in its fusion process, there will be a time come when the cost of actually running the station is less than the money we get on the output.
Yes, and this is what I was going back in the discussion earlier. The main cost of building and running a fusion power plant in the future will be the capital investment of building the machine in the first place, because the fuel will come basically for free. We use deuterium, which is commonly available. We produce the tritium from the lithium.
You still got to use the electricity to accelerate the gases up to the level that you want.
Exactly. So the overall energy balance is very important. A fusion power plant has to be constructed in the way the overall energy balance will be a big gain.
At the moment, we are capturing neutrons, which are generated by colliding hydrogen atoms together. Why can't we use that in the longer term process? Because you are introducing a second gas called tritium, which I understand is extremely rare. There's only 20 kilos available of it in the whole world, mostly as a byproduct of Canadian atomic energy power stations. They have a different technique over there. What's the function of tritium in creating the plasma, obviously out of the plasma, the neutrons?
Yes, tritium role is very important because the fusion reaction between deuterium and tritium is much easier.
Why?
It has to do with the nuclear resonance between how this deuterium and tritium interact. It's that 100 times more efficient process, fusion reaction between deuterium and tritium. Than
is that because they fuse at lower temperatures or they fuse at bigger distances?
They fuse at lower temperatures, yes, but they have a much higher fusion rate for the same temperature and conditions.
They create more neutrons.
They produce 100 times more neutrons. In principle, you could build a reactor using only deuterium without the need of tritium, but it will be much, much harder. So to start with, the first generation of fusion plants will most likely be using the reaction between deuterium and tritium, which is the easiest one and the most efficient one.
Right. There's only 20 kilos available in the whole world. I mean, somebody's only got to drop that down the canal on the way to the station, and you lost one of the main elements to fuel your power station. So how are you going to get more tritium?
Apart from the initial tritium to get it started, the power plant will produce its own tritium.
How will it do that?
The tritium is produced by using the neutrons that we mentioned earlier.
The ones that go into the blanket.
This goes into the blanket, and they will interact with the lithium, and they will a reaction between, an interaction between lithium and these neutrons will produce tritium. What you said about starting the reaction, we need some starting tritium. You could say that maybe for the first few plants this could be an issue. There is a tritium available. It's very expensive. The cost is very volatile because a very limited supply of tritium in the world.
That's the only reason why it's so high, though, because the Canadians can't use it for anything, and they just know we want it, and therefore it's so high. But it's rubbish as far as they're concerned.
There's also a very small market for it. Once there is a market for it, for sure you'll be using tritium. First few power plants will start operating, then tritium will be in great abundance. So it's only, let's say, a starting of the fusion plant.
Has anybody thought of any calculations over, say, a year, how much tritium would actually be produced?
It's an order of kilograms per day. It's a lot of tritium, but you have to keep in mind that...
It's 20 days at world supply at the moment.
Yes, but the fusion plant will be self-sufficient in tritium. This is a key aspect of the operating of a fusion plant. It has been demonstrated in some experiments that this is actually possible. You get from the neutrons you get from fusion, you can produce and you can breed tritium through different technologies. Of course, the technologies are very complex, but you can actually breed with the required ratios the amount of tritium you need. But if you take into account that you need only the order of kilograms per day of fuel, compared, for instance, a power plant running on coal or running on oil or running on gas, it's an order of a million times more.
Why is it taking so long to get to the 1% efficiency of neutron generation from each pulse that we're doing at the moment? It seems an awful long time to get to where we are already. It's just been the materials to build the thing.
What defines the time scale to develop fusion is the extreme conditions that you need to get a fusion reaction in an efficient way that will produce more energy that you need to keep it going in these extreme conditions. And this required a number of key technologies that took and still taking some time to develop and to establish. What we can say now is that we have these technologies, and these technologies have been demonstrated on JET. And superconducting magnets are going to be built for the ITER machine, our standard technology. So the big step now is to integrate all these technologies in big integrated demonstration that fusion can produce electricity in an efficient way that could be transformed into a power plant. And this is the key aspect of the ITER project in France.
Duarte Borba explaining how a power station running on atomic fusion should work in practice. But after 50 years of experiment, research and development, this extremely complex process has only managed to create enough power by atomic fusion to last for 1 minute, and that with only 70% of energy out that they were putting into the process. In order for a power station to work using atomic fusion, this process has to last continually, and with a net gain of energy over the energy put into it. So I went back to Nick Holloway and asked him when the public can expect to see a power station running on atomic fusion.
That's the question everyone always wants to know. The answer to that is that we have in Europe a roadmap now we're following in the fusion research, which says we will build a fusion power station by 2050, have it up and running by 2050.
So we're talking about another 30 years from now.
Yes, that's right. We need to follow a number of stages to get there. We know what we need to do now. We've proved it on JET. The next stage is to build a machine called ITER in the south of France, which is effectively the successor to JET. It's a global collaboration in fusion.
Will that produce energy for the grid, or is that self-contained, just another major experiment with everything in place?
It'll still be a scientific and engineering experiment, so not hooked up to the grid, unfortunately. But what it will do, for the first time, it will output commercial scale quantities of neutrons from fusion, about 500 megawatts or half a gigawatt, which is getting towards what you get in a power station. And so for the first time, that will show the world, yes.
And will it have fusion, the blanket technology?
It will test out some of the blanket technology and also the other engineering systems we need for power plant. That will be a big step in the right direction. And it will get to also, crucially, a net energy gain of 10. So you get 10 times more energy out of the fusion reaction that you need to actually power it in the first place. So again, a big step towards commercial power. So we'll take the results from ITER, and then we'll build a machine that we nicknamed Demo, which is the first fusion power plant, and that will be in probably in the 2030s or 20.
I'll have to come back and interview you on 2050.
That's right. By the end of the 2030s, we should be in a position to build Demo, and it'll be on the grid by 2050. So I would say it still be the second half of this century that we'll see a lot of fusion power around the world, powering your kettles and your TVs, etc. But it's definitely investment I think we need to make. With energy demand is rising all around the world, we can't keep using fossil fuels. We need to look in the long term now at things like fusion.
It all sounds so simple. Throw a couple of atoms at each other under certain conditions, get a neutron bounce off, catch it in a blanket, and drive a steam power station. What's the difficulty?
It's difficult to do. I mean, the nuclear power we have today, which is splitting the atom, which is nuclear fission, that's a lot easier to get going. Unfortunately, fusion is more difficult, but it's got more long-term potential. It's safer and environmentally friendly. We still suffer in fusion from this thing about it's away 30 years away, but we're being realistic now. We've got a roadmap, proved a lot of the science on JET. We know what we need to do. One of the good things about fusion research, it's always been people working together around the world on this common altruistic goal, and that's still continuing today. The next big project in fusion, ITER, will have 7 partner nations. So alongside ourselves in Europe, we'll have China, Japan, India, Russia, South Korea, and the United States.
Perhaps we should get the Canadians on board. They give us the tritium. Right?
They were at one point, I think they were interested in ITER, but they're not at the moment. But who knows in the future. At present, though, we have half the world's population represented in the ITER project in this big fusion initiative. Yeah. We're all working together to get this big project in the south of France, ITER, off the ground, and to prove the world this is a technology worth following it for future generations.
If you were to say what your own personal vision is of the future using this, what would yours be?
Well, I just think it's something we have to do for mankind, really. It's good to actually get up in the morning, go into work, knowing you're trying to do something that's eventually going to make a positive difference for society. Certainly by the time I retire, I would like to see fusion electricity powering my TV or my radio at home.
You've been listening to a roving report by Terry Meekin for Swindon 105.5, where this week we've been at the Cullum Centre for Fusion Energy. Swindon 105.5, daring to be different. You shouldn't worry.